Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to The Approach Shot, the golf show that's more laughs than links, more stories than strokes, more guffaws than golfers. Here are the hosts of The Approach Shot, John Ashton and Neil Michaels.
I know you have waited patiently, and you will now be rewarded. We are here, The Approach Shot. I'm John Ashton.
I'm Neil Michaels, and I have not waited patiently. I have been extremely impatient because
patience
I'm so
is a virtue, but not one of yours.
Not one of mine. It's never been one of mine. I'm so excited about today's show, and we'll get into that in a little bit. We're kind of in an interesting time. We're about to turn the calendar into April.
Yeah.
So there's stuff in April that comes up, but we just left some of the fun of March, including first day of spring and St. Patty's Day, which I know is a favorite of yours.
There was something that I meant to say prior to the show that ran on St. Patty's Day. There is an expression, and most of us who celebrate St. Patrick's Day are aware of the expression. It is Éireann go bragh.
Yeah.
Right? Which is sure. Ireland forever in right. Gaelic. Okay. Well, back when I was a kid and you were a kid, there was, I believe it was the Maidenform Bra Company.
Yeah.
They ran a advertising campaign with women wearing only their bras saying, I dreamt I scaled Mount Everest in my Maidenform bra.
Okay.
Or, you know, I dreamt I did this in my, you know, Maidenform bra or whatever. When I was a mere child, one of my disc jockey guys that I idolized came on the air on St. Patrick's Day, and he said, first break out of his mouth, I dreamt I played St. Patrick's Day music in my Éireann go bragh.
Oh, my God. Wow.
You know, and that campaign was still running on TV, and I just thought that that was the corniest, funniest thing I had ever heard in my life.
That's clever.
I remember that break so well. I may have even stolen it a few times.
I can't imagine. Isn't it funny for us that we can remember breaks that other people did? To this day, I can remember Brother Love signing off on WCAO in Baltimore, his sign-off. Mm-hmm. I can do the entire bit. He only signed off once. But I heard it, my buddy and I said it over and over so long
right.
that every time Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street comes on, I just start. I do it, and I do it right up to the post, and it's just, it's a kind of a sick addiction, but yeah.
And nobody else in the world would understand.
Nobody would get it, except my buddy and I, so I call him every once in a while. I'll be like, hey, just heard Baker Street, and he'll be like, ah, that's going to do it for me. Scott Richards is next for more whatever it is you're getting here in the hot blood, a delay in your ear. All of that, every bit of it.
Another one of my idols, I stole one of his things all the time. It was great. He used to talk about his ex-wife.
Oh, boy.
Beautiful woman. Wish I could remember her name.
Well, the funny thing about funny is that tomorrow, assuming that you're listening to this the day it comes out on the 31st of March, is April Fool's Day. Now, again, we're old radio people, so we do old radio bits and old radio stories. Did you ever have a radio station-wide April Fool's thing that you lived through?
Yes.
Look at your face. I don't know if I can tell this story.
It got the dude who started it in a lot of trouble. We were on a very powerful station here in Louisville.
Okay.
Very popular. 25 to 34 and up adults, we were number one across the board.
Okay.
Morning guy started it. It was when the new $20 bills were about to come out. And he said that so there would not be confusion, you needed to trade in all of your existing 20s for a new one. And when was the bank called the station manager at 11:30 in the morning saying, "What the hell are you guys doing over there?"
Was he willing to take the trade? Wow, that's a good way to make sure that the bank never advertises with the station.
Yes.
Well, we had one at a station I worked at in Maryland that I thought was clever, but it turned out the same way yours did.
Backfired, yes.
Backfired. On April 1st, they started playing Barry Manilow's Copacabana. First thing when the station went on, because it was a station that went on at 6 a.m., you know, sunrise to sunset. Played it the entire day. It's the only song they played the entire day. And they said, "We're changing format to the Copacabana format, and everything today is going to be Copacabana. Everything after that is going to be that." And I think it took people a bit. And I know that a lot of people were turning their radios off because how many times could you hear that song? We got so many calls. "What are you doing? What are you changing? You can't turn that crap off." All this kind of stuff. And of course, it was all a joke. I think the PD who decided that was a good idea thought that the PR that we would get from it would make up for the negative stuff. Mm-hmm. But here's what happens in a situation like that. You get all of the PR in the industry publications, and those people don't live there.
No.
All over the country. "Oh, that's a funny joke," and stuff. We lost so many listeners that we finally had to like do an ad campaign locally that it was just a joke to get people mm-hmm. back. So yeah. In the long run, it ended up costing the station money.
Yes. And where'd that PD was working on April 2nd? I wonder.
Somewhere else. So yeah, April Fool's is a lot of fun, unless it costs you money. People, for some reason, that's where the sense of humor ends.
Yeah.
When it costs you money, it's not funny anymore.
I always thought that practical jokes were neither practical nor jokes.
Really?
Laughing at the expense of someone else is not funny to me.
Yeah, but
humor needs to incorporate everybody and not hurt anybody.
Okay, but here's where the line is. The other day I was watching an old Friends episode, and it was the episode where Rachel taught Ross's kid, Ben, some practical jokes, including the one where if you put like a little bit of pencil granite on the end of a quarter and roll it down your face, that you end up with a line down your face. Uh-huh. That really doesn't hurt anybody. It's a little embarrassing for the guy who has the stuff on his face. But honestly, did it really hurt anybody? Now, when you do the practical joke where you put cellophane over the toilet seat and then things go everywhere, that's not good unless you're the one who's willing to clean it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, like the Copacabana thing, is a practical joke that backfires.
Literally.
Well done.
All right, so what are we going to do today?
Today, we are going to do something we don't do very often, which is have a guest who gives us really good information that is a hot topic, and we're getting some hot takes on the hot topic. Our friend Joe DeLeon, who is part of the Believe Network, and who is one of the absolute great college football evaluators, is going to come on here and talk to us about the upcoming NFL draft. And dude, I know you hate when I have notes, but I got notes.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And we've both lived in Atlanta, so we know that in Atlanta, his name would be Joe DeLeon.
DeLeon, yeah.
And Joe DeLeon, or DeLeon, or however you want to pronounce it, is coming up in just a few seconds right here on The Approach Shot. Hang on. You have waited patiently. We have returned as promised. We are The Approach Shot. I am John Ashton.
I am Neil Michaels, and I am giddy like a little kid.
Yes, you are.
This is just like my heaven.
This is numbers. Research.
This is numbers. And it's predictions.
This is what you do.
And the great thing about this is, even if you're wrong, you're not wrong. Because, you know, the thing that's great about being a sports prognosticator and a weatherman, you can sound like you really know your stuff. And if you're dead wrong, nobody ever calls you on it. So
do we have a sports prognosticator or a weatherman with us?
We have one of the country's great college football evaluators. He is a host of several shows on the Bleav Network. We are so excited to have him join us today. It's Joe DeLeon. Welcome, Joe.
I appreciate you guys having me on. I was telling you before we started taping, when Cam texted me, who's with Bleav, who does a lot of great job with booking on the network, he texted me that I was going on a golf podcast to talk about the NFL draft. I don't think I've ever been more excited to guest on a show. And I'm telling you guys right now, I don't just say that to any radio show or podcast I go on. This is probably the most juiced up I've been for a guest appearance. So I'm just happy that you guys were interested in having me on, and I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation today.
Was there a part of you that was like, wait, golf and the draft? How are we going to make this happen? It seems like ketchup and peanut butter. They're both great alone, but together I'm not so sure.
Well, see, as you guys know, anyone in the media that maybe doesn't cover golf, we all play golf for the most part. And then also, right. I'm a former college football player, former college long snapper. A lot of us also play golf. So there's so much interconnection, I think, with a lot of guys that are looking for that next way to stay competitive. So it was a no-brainer for me. I didn't even think once when Cam texted me, like, how is that going to make sense? I was like, cool, this is going to be so much fun.
Let's go. All right. And just to follow up on what you said, Joe did go to the University of Rhode Island, go Rams, where he was a long snapper in college. And John, just so that we know what level we're going to have to work this on, he was on the Dean's list.
Okay.
Not once, but twice, but eight times. Studied and majored in journalism. You know, the fact that you have done all of those things and now you have stepped it up and are one of the country's best recognized prognosticators for the draft, this is pretty cool, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you you saying that. And how did you find that I was on the Dean's list? Was that on my like football bio or something? I don't think I have that on my LinkedIn.
I do not reveal sources.
But I mentioned that Dean's list stat really made him popular in the locker room.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that I was I played in 39 games, but like I was kept around because I tended to boost the team GPA. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And just so that you know, that source that I have, your final college GPA was 3.75. I'm just saying.
All right. Now you're really freaking me. So you guys told me that there's a surprise coming up and I'm like worried that like my ex-girlfriend's going to come on screen or something. Like, is that what's going to happen at the end of this show?
Done my part if I have freaked him out. I absolutely love that. That's great. All right. Before we get into the draft, I think it's reasonable for us to take a step back. The draft is really important as a second step because when free agency started, which this year was nuts, the day that they said, okay, you can all start spending and getting and dropping and dumping and stuff, the NFL went crazy, which I've never seen it anywhere to the level it was this year. That's the first step in setting themselves up so that they know who they're going to go draft. So before we get to the draft part, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the big free agent signings or free agent walks, because that matters a lot into the next step. I think some of the big ones that got a lot of attention were Kirk Cousins going to the Falcons, Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles, Derrick Henry going to Baltimore, Tony Pollard breaking everybody's heart in Dallas and going to Tennessee, Austin Eckler leaving the Chargers and going to Washington, Shaq Barrett leaving Tampa and going to Miami. We'll get to Jacoby Brissett in New England, which makes no effing sense to me at all. Kendall Fuller going to Miami, Keenan Allen leaving to go to Chicago. A lot of these things matter because, for example, that last one, Keenan Allen going to Chicago, gave the Bears a reason, a bigger reason, to go get a quarterback in the first round. If you're going to build for the draft, you've got to give the people you're going to draft the weapons so that it makes sense to draft them. How much of all of this really matters, or how much of this is just, it wouldn't have mattered, the people who are going to pick are going to pick who they're going to pick?
Yeah, I think specifically talking about that Bears situation, I think we already knew the direction of that they were going to go in. I think that there was a lot of speculation and just a lot of hope for Justin Fields fans that he was going to stay in Chicago and that he was going to be the starter and that they would have used any of their first round picks, maybe trade back, accumulate some assets to build around him. I think that the aggressiveness to go and get Keenan Allen for me shows that the Bears are in this position where they don't want to be good in 2-3 years. They see what CJ Stroud did with the Houston Texans this past year, and they want to be good now. They want to compete in a situation where the NFC North is up in the air. The Vikings are starting from scratch, and the Green Bay Packers are still young, and we know that the Lions have been good, but there is a position here for the Bears that if they attack this draft cycle, in addition to going and getting Keenan Allen and some of the other moves that they made, like trading for Montez Sweat in the middle of the season, that they have a competitive roster good enough for them to sneak into one of those wild card spots. I will say the one move for me that has really shifted my perspective and projection on what a team is going to do is the Kirk Cousins signing that you mentioned first, because my thought process this whole offseason was Atlanta needs to go get a quarterback. Yeah. I didn't even think that Kirk Cousins would perceive that as a situation that he would want to step in and he'd be immediately excited and ready to compete, but he did. And that's great for the Falcons for having a veteran as decorated as him. But I, this whole time, thought that that eighth overall pick that they held, that they were going to use it to spend on drafting one of the top quarterbacks, or maybe even trading up to secure the future, because it's been a lot of band-aids, a lot of shuffling in and out. Matt Ryan tapered off so quickly that they wanted to start young. But that, to me, the Kirk Cousins situation, I think, has completely shifted the outlook for the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC South, because they have a veteran, and most importantly, an older veteran for a 4-year period of time, that their security and their future is locked in for a period of time.
And does it ever confuse you that the Atlanta Falcons don't make the right decision?
Yeah, I will say that this Falcons move, I like it, but at the same time, it feels like a lot of people are just jumping to this conclusion that they're going to win the NFC South. It's a guarantee. Everything is going to be a cakewalk for them. But I think it's more realistic that they're just going to go back to the days of when Matt Ryan would get the team to the wild card round, or maybe a little bit further, and then they would get cut short. That one time that they made the Super Bowl seems like an exception and not the rule. So if they get to the playoffs, it's great. I just don't know if it's really going to get them to that point where they're going to be consistently competing for a Super Bowl.
Well, and I lived in Atlanta at the time that that happened, and the fan base was all about Matty Ice. Oh my God, this guy, he's so great. He's got ice water in his veins. He could do anything, and then brought him to a Super Bowl, which nobody expected. But the overall feeling, and Atlanta sort of feels this way, or felt this way when I lived there for all sports, was the Braves would get to the playoffs and then lose in the championship games and not get to the World Series. So everything was about Georgia football. The Falcons have managed in getting Kirk Cousins to put themselves in exactly the spot you just described. They will make the playoffs. They'll win the NFC South, because who else would? And then what? Yeah. Kirk Cousins can't carry the team by himself. They're going to have to get something in the draft to give him some real help around him, because as we're going to say a couple of times here today, you can't complete a pass from your back.
Yeah, they are also one of those teams that I think are candidates to try and bolster their offensive line. They have effectively, I think, in the past 5 years, gone and found some new pieces, particularly Chris Lindstrom's been a really good interior player for them. But I haven't really seen much that makes me feel secure and good about their tackle situation. Jake Matthews is very old veteran now at this point, where you'd really consider drafting an offensive lineman with that eighth overall pick. And luckily for them in this year's draft, there's a lot of really good offensive linemen, whether it's Joe Alt, Talese Fuaga. There's a lot of good options for them to really shore up that offensive line and protect Kirk Cousins.
And even more so, the fact that there are so many quarterbacks and wide receivers that are going to go earlier, that there's a very good chance that the best of them are going to be available when Atlanta picks.
Yeah, that's a really, really important piece to this that you notice in a lot of mock drafts. The way that it's painted, how it's going to really work out, is different from the quality of certain position groups in certain spots. So the offensive line and cornerback are the most talented and the deepest groups in this draft. But as you're talking about here, the first four picks are probably going to be quarterbacks, if not four of the first five picks are going to be quarterbacks. And then receiver, as you mentioned, Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably going to come off the board really early. And that is going to trigger teams looking for these premier receivers like Malik Nabers from LSU, Roma Dunze from Washington, that right where the Atlanta Falcons, for example, are sitting, or maybe it's the Jets at 10, any of these teams that are sitting in this later range to the teens, that they'll be able to get their premier offensive tackles because of this rush and this aggressiveness to go and get these quarterbacks and these receivers.
It's reasonable to assume it's the biggest no-brainer in the draft that the Chargers are going to get Marvin Harrison Jr. if he's still available.
I think so.
If it starts to feel like he's going to get drafted earlier, which I can't imagine one of the other teams doing, is that pretty much at number five? Is that, with the exception of Caleb Williams, is that pretty much the slam dunk of the draft that he's going to go to the Chargers?
It's all purely contingent on what the Arizona Cardinals do, because if the Arizona Cardinals stick at four, then that throws the biggest wrench into all of this, because there is a possibility that the Vikings do trade up with the New England Patriots rather than them trading with the Cardinals or another team. Because from what I've heard, the Patriots might view this draft as just a building block type of a year and not the time to shove a rookie into a lineup that's not really ready to be even competent on the field. So depending on what happens with the Arizona Cardinals, that team to me would be the most likely to steal out the opportunity for the Chargers to go and get Marvin Harrison Jr. because we see what the Cardinals have done. They let Hollywood Brown walk in free agency and go to the Kansas City Chiefs. Right. They don't really have a ton of weapons. They need to find a premier guy in order for Kyler Murray to take that next step in his career, who looked really good in the final stretch of the season when he came back from injury. But I will say that the even bigger signal to me that the Chargers are going to draft a receiver is that they moved on from both Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. And right now it's just Quentin Johnston. Quentin Johnston is scary because he's not even close to the ceiling that we're hoping that he's going to reach. And he's very hit or miss as a player early on in his career. So they need some sort of assurance there that will make Justin Herbert perform better. And I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, if Harrison Jr. has gone off the board, makes the most sense for them.
I was looking at what the Chargers have. They also got rid of Austin Eckler. So not only did they get rid of their wide receivers, they got rid of their running back. They got Gus Edwards. I don't see him as the same kind of back, but he is dangerous out of the backfield. So he's definitely going to get his share of balls. Hayden Hurst, if he's healthy, he's a nice player. But you're right. They got to get maybe more than one of these guys if they're going to compete at all in that division.
Luckily for them, this year's receiver class is also very deep. So there's a position for them in the second and third round. And even on day three, like if they wanted to be really aggressive, they could probably get three receivers in this class if they really wanted to feel better about their current situation. I will also throw in there, though, I wouldn't completely rule out the possibility of the Chargers taking Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. We know that Jim Harbaugh is an old school individual when it comes to just general roster building philosophies. And one of the biggest pieces for Michigan's success was their tight end game. Colston Loveland is going to be potentially an early draft pick next year. And he was a key piece for their receiving room because they didn't have a lot of good receivers. Instead, they had a lot of really good tight ends. And then I even think back to when he was with the 49ers. And his history when he was a head coach with Stanford, the amount of good tight ends that came out of Stanford. And then we know that Vernon Davis had a bit of a career resurrection when Jim Harbaugh took over as the head coach there. So I would pay attention to Brock Bowers being an option as well.
With Travis Kelce having done what he's done, redefine the tight end position yet again. If you look at Brock Bowers, I see on your latest mock draft, you have him potentially dropping to 15 to Indianapolis. I would be shocked. I would bet the house that he goes in the top 10, but there is a segment right after number five or number six, starting at about Tennessee's pick. There's about four or five teams that really don't need one. Yeah, I could see him dropping out of the top 10, but I think one of the teams that should or probably will go for a wide receiver may surprise us and pick up Bowers instead, because he's got all of the tools that a wide receiver has. Plus, he's a tight end.
Yeah, Brock Bowers is so unique, especially because this tight end class it's really not good. He is the only real prize.
That's right.
If you're a team that's looking for a tight end, it's one of those very rare, weird circumstances, as you talked about, where the talent is top three in the class. I mean, I would even go as far as to say, for me, Brock Bowers is the most talented player in the class. He is the most gifted, rare player to come out as a tight end, because not only is he very quick linearly. He changes direction very easily. He's a great route runner, and he has tremendous intent and aggressiveness as a blocker to develop into the most well-rounded tight end in the NFL. But the weird piece now, as you're talking about, is a lot of teams don't really have this need for a tight end, or a big need for one. They might prioritize fixing their offensive line. When you take a tight end, it's a bit of a luxury pick. So if there is, you know, a team that's going to go after him, it's going to be somebody that has a secured veteran quarterback, a good offensive line. And a team that comes to mind is maybe the New York Jets are, yep, you know, is that first team at 10 to pull the trigger.
As I was looking at things, I thought the great fit would be Chicago for him, but Cole Kmet is so good and is, yeah, just learning the system and has all of the tools that Chicago can't be a place for him to go. You kind of look around, it's like, well, the Jets are a good pick. Washington's not going to pick him because they need a quarterback. New England's not going to pick him because, like you said, they're looking for draft capital. John's a big New England Patriots fan. I made reference to this before. They get rid of Mac Jones, and everybody understands that. And I think it actually probably is the best thing for Mac Jones' career for him not to be the starter in New England, because they don't have enough around him, and he's not that superior athlete that he can overcome those issues. But Jacoby Brissett, I mean, is that simply because he's a running quarterback and that he can at least survive because he could scramble and get out of harm's way?
The way that I perceive this situation, and it's interesting that when I was at the NFL Combine, heard from a couple of different people that Jacoby Brissett was going to be their primary target for figuring out their quarterback situation and just having some sort of a stopgap. I think the biggest reason why they went after somebody like him is, one, they're familiar with him. He's been there before. He's familiar with the situation, and he was successful there for the very brief period of time he was there. This situation and Jerod Mayo, the way that they're looking at this, this is a 3-year project. This team is particularly a mess on offense. Their offensive line is still rebuilding. Their run game is, you know, getting figured out. Ramondre Stevenson has been, you know, a quality back for them. They have no receivers. They have no tight ends. It's just, they're so devoid of talent. If they do take a quarterback, they don't want to throw him in there right away. And they would like for somebody to fall on the sword, if you will, to take whatever litany of hits that they're going to be delivered because of not only the lack of protection, but the lack of options to throw to. But in addition to all of this, if they potentially don't want to pick a quarterback, and this is something to really pay close attention to, they need somebody that they can trust that'll just be good enough. And I think that that's the bigger thing to really focus on with the Patriots, that I think that they're going to kick the can down the road on picking a quarterback possibly and taking one next year or the following year, because they'd much rather build a solid foundation for when they're ready to take on a quarterback, because they're smart enough to know, and they've seen enough in the past, for the past decades, for the history of the NFL, too many times NFL teams taking these young quarterbacks, trying to get them to elevate the level of the team, but because there's nothing around them, they struggle tremendously and their careers fall off too quickly before they can really build confidence. So I think that's the big reason why for Jacoby Brissett is that they just wanted some recognizability and some steadiness so that they could feel not good, but at least feel comfortable with their quarterback situation.
And look, for example, Mac Jones, what you were just describing with the right way they treat their quarterbacks or get the wrong one. And there's a lot of great young underclassmen quarterbacks that will be available in a year or two. It's not a panic situation for them right now. So.
Right. And I think that's, you bring up the really good point. Mac Jones is the even better example that they literally just watched this happen, trying to hope that this, you know, this guy was going to elevate the quality of the team, but the team was not ready to be prepared to help around him. Yeah. So they need to start fresh just in general offensively.
That sounds an awful lot like you have changed your mind. I read on one of your last mock drafts that you had Drake May going to New England number 3. Do you now, on this show, are you saying you think New England is going to trade down and trade that pick?
When I made that decision in my mock draft, I made that with the statement I just made in mind. I think that there's like a 50-50 shot that they go in one direction or the other. For the Vikings' sake, they would much rather trade up to 3 because then they don't get boxed out. They get to make the decision on who they want. they're not forced to take whoever the fourth best option is. I went with Drake May because just in general, if I look at what they're trying to do, Drake May is the more raw quarterback of the group who has the highest ceiling, I think, of any of the quarterbacks in this class. He is such a natural playmaker. So if you take him, if you're the Patriots, you can sit him behind Jacoby Brissett. Maybe you start him in the final stretch of the season in the final weeks. Don't rush him out there. And that is the right guy for that. Like, if they take Jaden Daniels, that to me doesn't make a lot of sense because you're just wasting this guy who's more ready to play and he's ready to go and ready to provide an impact. And then JJ McCarthy on the other side of that is so far away from being ready that might be a year to 2 years ready from playing that it makes even less sense. And he's somebody who would really struggle without the right pieces and resources around him. So I still stand by what I did in the mock draft, but I'm more so bringing this all up by saying, I think that if there's any team that we could just be so shocked by what they did, it could be the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And in fact, because my reputation is not on the line and I don't do this for a living, I am going to say right here and right now, I think Minnesota trades up with New England. Minnesota gets the quarterback that they want. They get to make the decision and not have the decision made for them. And New England at that point ends up getting a lower number one, probably a number two or number three in this year's draft, and then something in next year's draft. And they really get to build the lines back up, which is what they need the most.
Go find another Tom. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to try to talk about golf next when we come right back. We are those Weekend Golf Guys. Hang out. Well, now that we have discussed all of the ins and outs of the upcoming NFL draft, we are about to continue on with the golf segment of our program today.
Not so fast on that, my friend.
Gone through one page of his 3 pages of research, I have to apologize for him, okay? We are the Approach Shot. I'm John Ashton.
I'm Neil. I've got pages, Michaels.
Edit on the fly.
Listen, I got one of the great minds in not only college football drafts, but in setting NFL teams up for the future. So I do have to ask one question.
Okay.
Since the Cowboys have all been on vacation since the free agency started and they've done nothing. I mean, they've signed a linebacker. Their running back situation is a mess. They've lost their offensive tackle. They've lost some really key defensive pieces. There are, as of right now, some defensive backs, including Stephon Gilmore, who have not committed. This is a really important draft for the Cowboys if they don't do anything between now and the draft day for free agency. Can they do it? Can they make up what they've lost in this year's draft?
I certainly think so, because you talk about some of the positions of need they need to address. In the first round, particularly, you lose Tyron Smith, but at the same time, Tyron Smith was getting to that point in his career where we know that there's not much time left. He was slowly going to regress to the point where he's not going to be that same all-pro level tackle that we're used to seeing. So for them, where they're picking in the back end of the first round, they could get themselves one of these developmental tackles like Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, Kingsley So-Mateah from BYU are two that really intrigue me. And then if they wanted to go with somebody who's a little bit more steady and ready to play, I really like Roger Rosengarten from Washington, a little bit more of a right tackle. And he's experienced, refined, and I think could be a strong impact tackle for them. I also pay attention to what they do, maybe drafting a player for their secondary. I believe in the latest mock draft that you had pulled up, Cooper DeJean, the Iowa defensive back, is one that really excites me because I see him as a position versatile chess piece because he is just such a rangy and explosive athlete. I see this as a guy who I can bring to play in the slot, as somebody who I can have play outside at outside corner because he's fluid enough of an athlete. And then if I want him to play over the top as a safety or even in the box as a box safety, I really like his versatility. He, to me, is the one that just like really stands out the most as a potential for them in the first round. But they're also going to need to figure out who is going to replace Leighton Vander Esch as their next Mike backer. In the second round, three guys that I really love for them: Peyton Wilson from NC State, very similar to Leighton Vander Esch in terms of just physical profile. Junior Colson from Michigan, who was a big reason for Michigan's defensive success this year and why they won a national championship. And then the last one, a little bit more raw, but has the highest ceiling of all these linebackers, is Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M, who is shot out of a cannon type of a guy who flies all over the field, but just needs to hone in on his instincts. It could be a really impactful player for the Cowboys if they took him.
And you think there's a shot that they will be available at pick number 48?
At least one of those guys will be. I don't think that any linebackers will come off the board in the first round. And I think that if a run does start, it's going to be the middle to the end of the second round.
All right. I feel better about things. I appreciate your help on that.
There's a large number of NFL general managers listening and paying attention.
They probably are out on the golf course, actually.
Hopefully.
Apparently, you also have this great love for golf.
Yes. A little context. Since I stopped playing football and, you know, I've moved into working full time and trying to build my media career. I think a lot of former college athletes, you ask them, how do you kind of find a way to keep that competitive flame going? And I still lift. I do a lot of long distance running now, which I never did in college for football because it wasn't necessary. But I started to really dive in on golf because it's the perfect thing for me as a former specialist, former long snapper. It's all about technique and consistency with motion. It's all about, you know, reading and understanding the mechanics of your body. So I've over the past 2 years, I've really started to really, really fall in love with it. I will say I'm a bit of a hack. I am not as good as I wish I could be, but I've noticed because I've like really started to play more often over the past like year, I've started to build up some consistency.
Mm-hmm. You ever taken any lessons?
See, I'm so difficult. I refuse to take a lesson. I have one buddy who's a pilot and he lives in Florida. He plays nonstop. And whenever he came out to Palm Springs and we went to go play, he kept saying to me, like, maybe you should take a lesson. I'm like, you didn't take a lesson and you just went out there and played. I feel like I'm good enough of an athlete that I would hope that I can eventually figure this out just through trial and error.
Did you ever get a position as a long snapper without listening to a coach?
I did, but I took little bits of coaching, you know, wherever I could. And I did take some lessons. I know I sound like such a pain in the butt saying all this, but it's just, I just don't like being, I was coached for so long. I'm so sick of it.
There you go. That was brilliant. I loved how you were describing the game, the meticulous, the making sure that you have the same range of motion, making sure that you do all the things that, and then you don't take a lesson and you go out and you're a hack. Well, why do you think that is, bud?
I will say that I have some optimism that I feel the progress that I've made just through like the trial and error. And I watch like a million YouTube videos whenever I can through all of that. And like just range sessions, I have noticed a lot of improvement. I will say that is the only reason why I have yet to jump in on taking a lesson. If I hit a ceiling, maybe I will. And maybe, you know, today will be all the encouragement that I need.
And Joe, you know what, when they start keeping score at the range, you'll be great.
It's a great point.
You can slap them around a little bit. You're closer. But anyhow,
that's right. I didn't realize we're practically neighbors.
Where are you located at?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, okay. I make my way down there occasionally. I have a buddy who lives down there, plays Torrey Pines all the time. I want to go out there and play Torrey. That's like one of my, you know, one of my goals, to go play with him, but it seems hard to get a tee time.
Even if you don't, you should just come out here, grab a cup of coffee and walk Torrey Pines. It's so,
oh, beautiful. My God. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
So the interesting thing about what you said about this is that with all of the discipline that goes into your journalism and all the discipline that went into being a long snapper, there are a lot of things about golf. Everybody says you either love golf or you hate golf. And it's always a mixture of the two. You hit a bad shot, I hate golf. I hit a bad shot, I hate golf. I missed that putt, I hate golf. I hit a great drive, I love golf. It's so great. So for somebody who's as disciplined as you are, how do you manage to work that emotionally?
I think having been a long snapper and just falling in love with that process of like not just playing football, but like learning how to be a really good long snapper. It is a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of recording yourself, filming yourself, and then like finding those deficiencies. And obviously, like with anything like this, where it takes a lot of repetition, there's going to be those points in time where you're frustrated. And I think that applies to like anything in life, and especially for what I do for work as a producer and as an on-air host and as an NFL draft analyst, that there's a lot of trial and error of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. So I think that because the position that I played, as I mentioned earlier, the understanding of it just taking a million reps, taking nonstop, just rep after rep after rep and intentional reps has really kind of made me feel a little bit more optimistic about it. I'm one of those people who there'll be the occasional time where I'll get really frustrated and there's a lot of expletives after a bad shot. I think like most of us tend to have.
Never happened.
Right. I still am understanding that whenever I make a mistake and I do something wrong, it's an opportunity to get better. It's for anything for me, it's all about frame and just mental, how you approach things. And I think that golf is a really good opportunity, I think, for anybody just to kind of understand and look at other aspects of their life and say, like, how can I get better? And you have to do it with a certain approach to detail.
Let me give you just quick case in point about your aversion to coaching. I just was fitted for a club. I was swinging, and I'm always intimidated swinging in front of a PGA pro anyhow. But I was swinging in front of a PGA pro, and I kept hitting on the heel of the club. And I was getting very frustrated because I didn't have any idea why I was doing that. And he just told me, he said, John, your first move is to move your hands away from your body. So when you come back, you're hitting with the heel of the club. Just keep your hands where they are when you set up. I never would have figured that out. You know, I might have had I been taping myself or whatever, but I mean, just that little thing. And I just started striping them.
It's a very good point. And I think a lot of the people who, like, there's been times where I've played and I've gotten thrown in a cart with a random and told me the same thing. I think at some point, the way that I've kind of viewed it, at some point, I think I might seek it out and not tell anyone. I think the intent is to not tell anyone, because everyone's gonna be like, wow, Jed, like, I want my buddies who next time I meet up with the play, to be like, wow, how did you get all good all of a sudden? I think that's the main goal is to sneak up on on everyone.
You think there's some shame if you tell them I took a lesson?
No, that's not what it is. It's not because, like, I feel shameful and like, oh my God, I couldn't figure it out on my own. I just want to mess with my buddies and anyone I'm playing with that they're going to be like, because it's going to piss them off, because, like, I'm not the worst of my friends, but I'm probably more down the middle. But if I suddenly am up to par with the top of my friend group, I'm sure that will certainly piss off a number of them.
It usually does. But here's quick little secret. All you have to do, as he says, easy game, is just make sure that the club is perpendicular to the target. The club face is straight and you hit the ball in the middle of the club face. That's
easier said than done.
Simple game. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Just like striking that perfect putt. You know, you're 10 feet away. All you have to do is read the green exactly, hit the putt perfectly with the exact amount of force and read the green perfectly. It's an easy game.
You make it sound so easy.
Right. It is easy. It is. It's easy. Hard to do, but easy to understand.
Right.
Easy to accomplish.
That's right. You know what's not easy? The six pack. Joe, I do see a little sweat.
I'm pretty cool right now.
For you, coming up, the dreaded six pack. And we'll explain when we come back.
And we'll be right back with Joe DeLeon here on The Approach Shot. And we are back right here on The Approach Shot. We are ready for the six pack. I am John Ashton.
I am Neil Michaels. And yes, it is time for the six pack. John, I think we've done a sufficient job in shaming Joe into getting a lesson, don't you think?
I don't know.
I guess
I'm going to report back. I'll have to report back.
You know where to find us. There you go. Joe, it's time for the six pack. What we do with the six pack is we fire off six questions at you. We want the first thought that comes to mind. First answer. Don't think about it. Nope. We want the first thing that comes to mind. All right. Question one. You were a long snapper in high school and college. And since long snappers only get noticed when they do something wrong, what's the best story of a snap gone wrong?
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I've never had a bad snap. Are you talking about me in general? Just football in general? I've never had a bad snap. I've never had a bad snap. I can't believe that can't be. The worst snap that I had was just because my punter dropped the ball that was right in his hands. I started 39 games, so I can't believe I'm going to be that guy. I'm trying to be humble here. I never had a bad snap in college. I promise you that.
But your punter has had some bad hands. Got it.
Yeah, I had four different punters all 4 years. None of them, not a lot of consistency.
Gotcha. All right. Question two. Do you, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, and others have some kind of like secret bet or competition that you don't let the rest of us in on?
I wish that I could say that I was in cahoots with, with Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. That would be really cool. I will say, though, a lot of the just general draft coverage community, there's a ton of communication amongst us. There's a lot of people talk to one another. The NFL Combine, I think, is the one of the most interesting just events I've ever been to, because you show up and you see all these different people at all these different outlets and you just get to talk ball with them. So not with those guys, but maybe with some, you know, more mid-tier guys, you know, certainly in cahoots, if you will, with them.
That sounds like it might be. Is it a bet? Are we talking a bet or are we talking bragging rights?
Maybe a little more bragging rights and just general correctness.
I think you guys should create a trophy for the guy who gets the most right and then be able to come on and show it.
It's too subjective. There's too many guys that are going to be like refusing to admit that they're wrong, which still happens to this day. So we will never agree on something like that.
Perfect. Understood. All right, question three, and if you think that I did some digging that scares you before, you just wait. I know as a journalist, you're supposed to be impartial, but I read that J.J. Watt is your favorite football player. Let's put him... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I wrote that on my... That's in my bio from when I played at Rhode Island. I wrote that in high school, so I remember when I wrote that. Sorry, what was the question?
Okay, so let's put him in a foursome with you. So now it's you and J.J. Watt, kind of fun. You can add two other people, sports figures or not, from any time in history, whether you know them or not. Who are the other two people in your foursome?
Okay. This is a tough one. I think Joe Montana would probably be one I'd throw in there. I'm a big Notre Dame fan. My dad went to Notre Dame, and then I also was named after Joe Montana, so I have no idea if he's any good at golf. I also feel like Charles Barkley would be really fun to play golf with. Just from like, there's so many funny bloopers of him playing. I feel like he would be hilarious to play with. So I'd probably throw him in there.
Hasn't you Charles have been named in every foursome that you've asked that question of?
A lot of them, yeah. I think people say that because they know if Barkley is there, you're not going to have the ugliest swing.
Exactly the point.
All right, question four. Everybody in the biz knows when you talk as much as we do, we got to keep the voice healthy. So are you a salt water gurgler, a lemon water guy, a green tea fella, a lozenge guy, or do you have your own trick?
I have not tried any of those. I have heard those. And for the amount of times that I've jumped into a show with a squeaky voice, now I'm regretting not having doing that. My go-to is, as you guys saw, I just pour cold brew or another cup of coffee. I drink too much coffee as is, but that is usually my go-to. Instead of focusing on how my voice sounds, I'm so over obsessed with having enough energy. So the coffee is usually the pregame ritual.
Yeah. That's what and John coffee. Does.
Yeah. Coffee contributes 100% for all of that.
I'm afraid that if I had too much of that, I'd be like, okay, here comes the six pack.
I can never have enough. I luckily don't never get to the shakiness point, I think, because my tolerance is way too high. Right.
Yeah. I was once told by a GM that I had a coffee cup hermetically sealed to my hand.
There you go. All right, question five. You know the expression, drive for show, putt for dough. If you're in a best ball with your buddies, are you showy? Or are you doughy?
Definitely showy. I mean, as a former athlete and an avid weightlifter, I mean, I'm one of those guys that I'd rather hit it further rather than straight. Not on like if I'm actually like in like a serious situation, but if I'm trying to like outprove one of my buddies, I'd rather, you know, put up the biggest drive that I can. So probably I'd go with show.
You know, that's really funny that you say it like that. I've never thought it in that context. You're right. If you're playing with your buddies in a best ball, if you hit it farther, you get a high five and everybody, oh, good shot, dude. If you hit a long putt, people come over and be like, nice shot. And that's it.
Right.
Even though the putt helped you way more than a long drive, because the other guys can hit a long drive.
Right. I feel like any time that I've played, even like not in those like highly competitive situations, just like when you're playing, one of your buddies hits the best drive of the day, that's all you talk about after and the rest of the day. Somebody hits a really good putt, it's usually the person who hits that putt who's the most excited, and then everyone else is kind of focused on what else is going on with themselves.
And the guy that keeps talking about it. But I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in that expression, because a great drive is going to set you up so well for the rest of the hole.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you have a lousy drive, then, you know, you may have to make a 30-foot putt in order to score well.
As the guy who brings the putter in a best ball, I will tell you that you're exactly right. The fact is that if you're at the 19th hole and people are like, you remember what you did back on number three? You cranked that sucker. Mm-hmm. It was so far 300 yards and stuff. And I go, hey, I nailed a 30-foot putt that went over a hill and down the ridge and came back, and they'd be like, oh yeah, that was good too.
Yeah.
There you go. Question six. And we ask this of everybody who comes on the show. Since we are the approach shot, Joe, in your approach to life, what one rule do you live by?
Oh man, that's a great question. And I kind of said this earlier. I know that I'm sure people come on with more fun answers, but repetition for me is just my approach is how many reps can I get? The only way that you can get better in anything that you do is focusing and getting the reps in. I feel like there's so many people that I know in my life and in the, you know, the media sphere in general, they think everything's just going to come to them immediately. There's very few naturals in any sport, any career field. It's all going to take natural over continuous repetition. And again, as I mentioned earlier, with the way that I play golf and the reason why I think I've fallen in love with it so much is that everything that I do, I embrace the mistakes, I embrace the issues, and I'm always trying to look for that next way to get better. And just by doing it over and over and over again. And if you do something continuously enough times more than the other person, it's usually the way that you get ahead. So I not as probably as fun as some other guys' answers for that question, but that's, you know, that's usually what I live by.
I like that. Put in the work. That's it.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Put in the reps. Joe, you are off the hot seat. Well done, my friend.
This was a blast, guys. I appreciate you. You have me on, and maybe next draft cycle or another time, I'd love to come back on. And it lived up to the excitement that I had beforehand of coming on. Normally when I do like ones that are over 20 minutes, I'm always like super nervous that like I'm missing something, but like this time flew by. So this was a blast. I appreciate you guys.
Well, you can come on back right after your first lesson. Tell us how it works.
There you go. Okay. Wow. Hey, like I said, no one's going to find out about the lesson. It's just because one day I'm suddenly going to be better. That's what's going to happen.
There you go. Just suddenly.
The reps finally pay off.
Before you go, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Give us your top five for the draft.
Brock Bowers, number one, the tight end from Georgia. Number two is
What?
Brock Bowers is my number one. I said it earlier. Brock Bowers.
He's going number one. You think he's going number one?
Oh, I thought you meant just like my big board number one. Let me rephrase.
Who's going number one? Who's going number two?
Caleb Williams to the Chicago Bears at number one. Number two, the Washington Commanders, Jaden Daniels for me. Yep. Number three, Drake May for the New England Patriots. Number four, if they don't trade out, Arizona Cardinals, to me, take Marvin Harrison Jr. And then number five would be Malik Nabers from LSU for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Ooh, JJ McCarthy, you see in that situation dropping out of the top five.
Assuming that there's no trade. Yeah. And if there isn't number six to the Giants, there's been a lot of rumors of that. I think that that would probably be his next most likely destination.
Cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to put this show out there around the 1st of April or so. I'm sure a lot of things are going to change. What will be really cool is to listen back to this after the draft, see what's changed, see what's happened, and see how close you got.
Of course.
Joe, wow, it's been a blast having you. I got to tell you, as somebody who obviously follows this stuff, to be able to hang out with you and talk about it and talk about golf has been just a joy.
Yeah, and thanks again. It was a really fun time, and I'll make sure to, you know, stay in conversation, and I'm excited to see when this episode drops. I'll be, you know, juiced up to tune back in.
After the draft's all over and stuff and you got nothing to do. Go play some golf somewhere, man.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you know,
exactly.
If you do take that lesson, you can just email us. We'll just keep it between us.
I'll email you guys in some code. It won't be direct. You'll be able to figure it out.
Joe, great to meet you, my man.
Perfect. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much.
And we are back for a little bit yet together with the Approach Shot. I'm John Ashton.
I am Neil Michaels. Hey, before we talk about what we said we were going to talk about, we did a huge change in the website. For one thing, we put the pictures of guests who actually appeared in the same year. We have something brand spanking new on the website, which we want to talk to you about, which we're excited about, which is there is a page on there called Talk to Us. And it is exactly that. You go there, you give us your name and information so that we can say, hey, Steve from Baltimore said, and talk to us about, do you like the guest? Did you like the show? What about upcoming shows would you like to hear more of or less of? Just talk to us about anything. There's a whole page just for that. You can also go on there and get some really spanky merch. We've got coffee mugs and shirts and things like that. So you can buy that now. Thank you very much to your friend, Lindsay Anderson, for kicking us in the rear end about this. Instead of having to go track us down on Twitter and stuff, go right to that page to approachshot.net and you can buy the merch right there.
Right there.
So I'm excited as heck about that.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited as hell about that. Can I say that? Yeah.
You can.
Okay.
You have special dispensation this week alone.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
I appreciate the dispensation. So what do you think of our boy Joe being a little bit leery about taking a lesson?
That's weird. Maybe he's right. I mean, I didn't play football in college. I got a little bit upset about getting yelled at a lot in high school. So yeah. I can see, you know, they keep saying that, well, if they didn't care, they wouldn't yell. But I can see where you might get a little burned out on being coached. But like he said, nobody is a natural.
Right.
You know,
you can be a natural athlete, but that doesn't make you a natural golfer.
And repetition in golf, it is very, very possible to repeat and learn the muscle memory of the bad stuff.
Yeah.
And at that point, it becomes almost impossible to improve.
Well, you know, you said something interesting there before about being yelled at and all that kind of stuff. And you know, if being yelled at shows that you're loved, then my father loved the hell out of me. But that's a whole nother therapy session. We as DJs would finish our show, and a lot of people don't know this, we would finish our show and then we would go talk to the program director who had notes on the show at least a couple of times a week, if not every day.
Uh-huh.
Some of it was like, oh, shut up. And some of it was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
To this day, bright, tight, brief, real, and relevant. I remember it like it was yesterday. Bob Hughes from WASH in Washington, D.C. telling me, bright, tight, brief, real, relevant. And that stuck with me to keep everything that you do when you're having these conversations, something that's relatable. Well, that was coaching.
Yeah, and exactly.
The right stuff sticks with you for forever.
I was told two things that I could not ever forget. One was be funny in a minute or less.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was when addressing people that are listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
We are so lucky in the English language that we have the same word for you singular and you plural. Every other language, it's different.
That's true.
I can say, how do you feel about that? And it sounds to someone listening like I'm talking directly to them, and it builds rapport, which is important. It's too many people say things like, hey, everybody.
Hey, you out there, the listening audience.
Even how y'all doing or anything like that. And even though in the South, y'all is singular, y'all is plural.
That's right. I was going
to
say that.
Get into that.
What we have taken from those lessons are the same kind of things that Joe needs to take. And frankly, I know I do too. Go out there and take a lesson. You're not going to learn everything in one lesson, but you will learn enough to want to take another lesson. Because what you just said, you went to the fitting, you hit the ball 20% farther with their club, but you struggled until somebody told you what it is that they noticed you were doing wrong, and you fixed it, and bang. You're crushing it. Isn't that what we want? Somebody to insta-fix our lives and our golf game?
Another little quick anecdote. the producer of Those Weekend Golf Guys, intrepid producer Mark, had a problem with always hitting his balls off the tee to the right.
Mm-hmm. As do I.
And I mean, he'd get to the point where he'd start aiming left when he set up.
As
which
do I.
Which exacerbates the fade or the as we used to call it, his power fade to the right. And Jeff took him into his indoor studio and in 5 minutes looked at what he was doing. He hit a few balls and he said, "Mark, give me your club." He took the club away from him and said, "Just let your arms hang natural." He said, "Okay." See, because when his hand laid natural, it laid like this with his palm facing into his leg.
Mm-hmm.
So that were he to grip the club, his knuckle would be on top and his thumb would be on the side. Yet he had been taught in his grip to grip the club with his thumb on the top and his hand this way.
That's how I've been taught. Is that really all I need to do?
If that's how your hand lays naturally, that's how you do it. Okay.
It's not.
No, because what happens then is you take the club back and your wrist twists because your wrist is going to be in its natural position when it comes back down. So what's happening is when you come back down, your wrist is in its natural position and your club face is not straight.
Yeah, I do this where my thumb is straight down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I come back, my wrist is obviously at that point not in its natural position
mm-hmm.
because that would be here.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring, are you saying if you bring it back, you should be able to like look at your watch? Because right
no,
now,
what I'm saying is that you should stand without a club in your hand and just let your arms, you know, take the posture of hitting a club.
Okay.
Right? So you're going to be bent from the waist a little bit.
Yep.
But you let your arms hang. And if your arm, the way your arms hang, what you do then is without moving the hand from its natural position, take the club and put the grip in your hand, but keeping it where it lies naturally.
That's interesting.
And and then proceed from there.
All right, I got time this afternoon. I'm going to the range.
Okay, fine.
Okay, fine.
And what Jeff did one time is a guy came in and he told me the story today. He said a guy came in and was going to buy a new $799 driver because he wanted to swing faster and wanted it to go farther.
Okay.
So Jeff fixed his grip the way it should be.
Uh-huh.
And the guy started hitting it straight right in the middle of the face, which meant he was able, because now his position was correct, he was able to swing faster. And Jeff said, "Okay, so now you don't need an $899 driver. How about an $899 lesson?"
There you go.
Because he said, "This accomplished it."
There you go. I love
a driver wouldn't have.
Very good.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
Check that natural, the way your hands lie natural, man.
I will give that a shot this afternoon, and I will let you know next week how that goes.
I'll be here next week.
Speaking of next week, I will be back next week, too. We will have another stellar guest. And actually, we've got we think all our guests are great, and we know that some of them have maybe less of a profile, but those people have some of the greatest stories, too. But we've got some really high-profile people coming up that even kind of amazed us. So just stay with us and have some fun with us. Go to that website if you would. Again, that's approachshot.net, not theapproachshot.net, because
someone stole our the.
I hate when that happens. I'm Neil Michaels.
I'm Sean Ashton. We'll see you next week right here on The Approach Shot.
You've been listening to The Approach Shot with the Weekend Golf Guys. If you like this week's episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. And find us on the web at approachshot.net.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.